so rich, so many questions springing to mind. What a fantastic, complex practice. I've made sheets and sheets of questions here, but we have little time, so I want to open it up to questions very soon. But I'd like to start. Would you mind expanding a little more about your relationship to the materials and the processes, and whether it's something, whether you are very hands-on or whether you are very use fabricators, or your relationship to the drawings and the process to get that? What point is the touch?
Yeah, because it's a combination. I mean, obviously, I work abroad quite a lot, and one of the the last thing I showed had to be built in situ. Quite often my work has to be built in situ because you just can't transport it. It would be too expensive.
Mm.
So the material relationship changes every time in relationship to a context. In the case of spatial, of things that go without saying, I went to Graz with a carpenter who's a very good friend of mine, and we built it over a week, which meant that I also learned a little bit more about carpentry over that week. And that was a great way to deal with that. Quite often I work with fabricators, and then drawing is always my medium in between thinking and doing somehow. Even though I haven't really shown any drawings, I always go through drawing in order to think, imagine, design, plan, instruct the things that I'm doing. I very often work with specific materials that have, I think, meaning by themselves, like the gold curtain.
Hmm.
I've worked a
that
lot with
recurs,
this.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, I've worked a lot with this thing. It's called the space blanket. I'm sure you're all familiar with it. It's like the survival blanket material. It's the stuff that you use when you go camping to insulate yourself from the floor or for marathons. It's an extremely insulating material that makes this weird crinkling sound. It was invented for the Apollo missions, and I've been fascinated with this thing for a while. So in that case, you know, space blanket is a direct material practice. So I have the whole range.
And I was thinking of it very particularly when you did all the Pirelli work, and we had those lovely, strange, droopy samples at the end, whether you were there in on the factory floor asking them to make things, or moving the rubber around, or...
No, I try to isolate their movements with or on material. That's what those things are. Mm. They're literally like the material trace of a gesture. So I'm there to capture it. What I do is when to stop and when to stop. But I didn't... I mean, obviously, I handle them afterwards. I transported them, I packed them.
They made them. Yeah. Was it like a fabricator?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
and a very particular set of instructions.
Yes.
I'd like to... Is there a question from the floor? Because I should just hog all the questions otherwise. I'll give you one more.
Two.
Go on then.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for that. It's really good. My question is, I'm wondering if you could tell me how you cast that concrete fabric.
Very strange. Well, look, there's a trick. There is a material that is an infrastructural material for when to avoid landslides, that is called concrete blanket, and it's manufactured normally. It's very very thick, and it's a sort of four-dimensional net that has concrete dust in it that you soak and cast. I use that technique.
Cool. I was wondering, so I've visited your exhibitions in very contemporary spaces. So I was wondering if you've had an exhibit in a space that's really challenged you, really sort of you've got to deal with, but yeah, it's challenged you.
I mean, to be honest, I prefer it when it's not so white cube, because there's more to work against. As an artist, I enjoy that more. I usually think it's more interesting, because a lot of the work, you know, like alteration to existing conditions, is all cutting into the existing architecture. So the white cube situation is one in which there's almost no architecture. You know, there's like very little to react against. You know, I have to say that, I don't know, what's the most challenging place? I mean, when I was planning this show at Hangar Bicocca, which is this huge, dark, black industrial space, there's no white walls, there's hardly any walls there, it's all Corten steel. It was quite daunting, but because of the scale. I like architecture that's got personality, but that was the scale. It was just so big, it was really hard to imagine. You know, when the first time I went there, I actually timed how long it took me to get from the front door to the back wall of the big space. I was in the small space. And that was 7 minutes, 7 minutes walk. That's what I was kind of measuring myself against. And I had almost no tools to deal with that. So I started making films with my phone. I kind of tried to plan it in time. You know, you might meet this and that. That's how I worked with it. I think that's one of the scariest, let's say, installation plan phases I've ever had. You know, this big white expanse, and you realize that your artwork is like this more.
So you presented, you more usually presented with a space, or do you more usually go in search of a space? Because they sound...
Well, with ESAT projects, we looked for a space for a very long time. Yeah. We needed it to just be big enough, but we were quite open-minded as to what that was. One of the slides I showed was in a film studio. That is a space that I looked for very much. It's a TV film studio underneath Leeds University. And I was interested in the film studio because it's a place where images are produced. You know, so this relationship to the production of reality, in a way, is what interested me. Quite often, you know, you're invited, so you have to work with what you're given. Sometimes it's tiny, but everybody's looking at it. Sometimes it's huge, and nobody will come. And
I suppose then there's quite a long journey to go on, isn't it, when you're presented with the space?
Yeah.
To find the references that are going to...
Yeah, and I work a lot with the architecture, so I need time.
Yes.
You know, with experience and with time, it's true, I do get faster at it. You know, I can see that.
Because
it seems to 10 years
in my
ago.
Head, is that's quite a daunting prospect, isn't it? You walk into that huge
yes,
space. Yes, you
start learning or recognizing
where
tools
start?
Or strategies, almost, that you can use again and again.
And I was thinking particularly of things like your use of the breeze, and you talked about the open window and obviously the curtain and the fans reflect the breeze. So is that a sort of continuing motif or something you could use as a starting point?
It's always different, and yet the technique is always the same. Yeah. You know? Like, how do you get a breeze going so that you're not in a static space, so you don't feel claustrophobic, but you know there's like a larger movement. So you always think, okay, I'm going to cut through here and through there. Okay, that doesn't work. You know, the technician will tell you, no. Okay, I'm going to open a door here and open a window there. Somebody else will say, no, health and safety, no way. And then you develop a way.
And I suppose all the time you're developing a particular language. You know, you're enriching the language that you use in your...
I used to think that my work was unrecognizable, that you couldn't tell that this was a singing condor. And I used to think that I was a problem, but I think you're the last person who can recognize your own language anyway. I'm sure everybody else does. So I don't really think about it so much anymore.
Do I have another question? There's a question.
I'll shout, don't worry. I was interested in your dedication of our work, your credits. And it's quite refreshing because I suppose most people tend to distance themselves from something because they don't want to be related to something that maybe they don't like or they may have stolen an idea from. I just wondered if you've been compared to people in the past.
If I've been compared to people, I would probably be the last person to hear that. I'm sure people compare me to people all the time. The dedications are really important to me as a way of acknowledging friendship as one of the main sources of energy and inspiration. And this thing that I talked about for a bit, you know, this fact that you, I think you really never work alone and you never start from scratch, I feel very strongly about this. And I feel very strongly that the entire structure of the art world is trying to tell you otherwise. You know, that you are alone as the single author or the single artist. And I think that both politically and emotionally, I think that's totally unacceptable. And it's never the case. But if you work as a collective, it's actually quite difficult. You know, it's hard to to apply for a job if you're more than one person. It's hard to get a studio, you know, hard to get an art prize. Everything is structured around this idea of the individual, and I think it takes a lot of explicit undoing for people to kind of register. So yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Sometimes it works.
You've had some of those collaborations for a long time.
Yeah. Gavin and I have been working together since 2003. And now it's quite a long time.
And so, obviously it must have gone through lots of different phases.
Yeah, and sometimes we worked a lot, and some years were really productive. Like I was looking at 2005 we did nothing else. We just worked together the whole time. And then some years are, you know, like a bit more distant, but we don't work as support structure anymore, but in ESAP projects, we're both directors of the organization, so in a way the collaboration continues, but in different guises. Some people I've never worked with, you know, like Avery Gordon. I've been inspired by, or she's written things that I used in my work, which is one of the works was dedicated to her, actually. But we've never actually made an exhibition together. It's more that, you know, a piece of text of hers I might carry around for a long time. Mm-hmm. She's asked me to make artworks for texts that she was doing.
So that's a nice collaboration.
She's also a great friend. And an excellent writer, if you ever come across her.
So, a question?
Celine, thanks. It's about funding. Do you use collectives to fund the production of your work, or do you pay them?
Or do I pay them myself?
Well,
I'm not rich, and I am also not in the commercial art system. I'm not represented by a gallery, which means that I hardly ever sell work. You know, a few museums have bought my work. So I have to fundraise for production money. Some of my work is very cheap, some of it is not. So it's always on a case-by-case situation, but if I don't have any budget, I actually can't really make much. So, I used to do a lot more self-initiated projects, just because, you know, that's how life is, and you grow up, and now more people know about my work, so I get more invitations, you know, that's all, it's just time. But the self-initiated projects often included fundraising or looking for institutions who needed something that you could give them, or, you know, bartering, or all the things that you do when you don't have much that are great, actually. I'm trying, you know, like my biggest problem isn't actually finding money to make stuff, it's finding money to store stuff. That's my nightmare. That's the stuff that wakes me up at night, because I make something and then I think, what am I going to do with it? You know, it's going to come back. At some point, when the show in Milan closed, this was a survey show. I've never done such a big show with so much of my previous work. I honestly would often lie awake through the winter thinking, what am I going to do when the stuff comes back to me? You know, in the middle of May, all these crates are going to come back in one go. And I had to find a way of distributing them, because I don't want to pay storage thinking that, you know, at some point when I'm 75, I'm going to have a retrospective at MoMA, because it might not happen. So you have to find a place for these things, that, you know, a place also in your wallet. So a lot of things I get rid of.
So what do you do? What do you do with things?
I plan. Some things I throw away. Some things get demolished. I think if anything can be remade, it's not worth keeping. I've become quite harsh about this. You know, you're not going to keep like 5 bits of steel and a bit of timber. It's
easier and cheaper to remake it. Things that I'm really attached to or were really difficult to make, I have a little storage unit. I try and keep things on tour. I circulate, work, and I recycle a lot. I often have fantasies about doing work on paper. That's my biggest fantasy, actually.
And of course you do, and there is the books as well that go with the...
Yeah, I have something for
you. So you have boxes of books as well?
I've got boxes of books. Yeah, no, books are not that bad. Books also get distributed. Mm-hmm. And they have a longer shelf life in a way, and they continue to circulate.
Mm-hmm. So any other questions? I'd really like you to say a little bit more about how you actively go about the collaborations, because some are long-term collaborations, so you know people very well, but then some are newer collaborations that have been initiated. It's like a dance, I suppose, a collaboration, when you meet someone or you see someone's work or an idea and you start to build that. And I'm very curious, it's such a part of your whole practice, the development of these collaborations and the friendships that become working partnerships. And I don't quite know what the question is in that, but it's such a fundamental...
No, but I know what the answer is that, you know, I was a musician before I became an artist. And I think it comes from music, because the way that people work together in music is very clear. You know, you play together, you accompany each other. It's not a question of hierarchy. You know, who's interpreting the music and who's the composer? You know, John Tilbury plays Morton Feldman. It's not going to take anything away from Morton Feldman, the fact that John is playing it. So these relationships, I think, are a lot clearer in some ways and a lot more open. And I mean, I wish more art was made in that way, but that's the way that I enjoy working. I think you do together what, you know, better than you can do alone. It's very simple. And then some objects or some things can be separated, of course, but things are often born out of the dialogue, so it's just a way of acknowledging those dialogues.
So when John Tilbury was playing, with that big crew of people miking up and so on, in your installation, how active were you, or did you just create the forum, or did you create it with them in mind?
I spent ages creating the setup for them.
Fine-tuning
the position of artworks in relationship to each other, the sound system, how long we had in the gallery space, taking them on particular tours. So I did like day and night, and
I spent ages setting it up.
Yeah.
And then you set the scene for them, and then you waited to see what they would do with them.
And then I invited them for dinner a lot
over
those days. No, I was more like the host, somehow. Really trying not to tell them what to do.
Right.
But, you know, it's funny how you can talk very different languages because you come from different professions, but tackling the same thing. So we had a lot of discussions about collaboration, a lot of discussions about, you know, politics or attitude to context, and they just translated that in completely different ways that I never could have.
And they had no, or you found common ground over the boundaries, I suppose, as you were saying, between what's your work and what's their work and what they could and couldn't do.
They could touch everything. They could do whatever they liked. The problem there was that they could do whatever they liked. I completely trusted them. But we had planned a performance for thinking that we'd have about 200 people in the audience, and it was quite a big show. 200 people would flow, you know, especially as the sound travelled in the space, it would have been totally fine. But there weren't 200 people, there were 700. And it was packed. And there were people everywhere climbing on everything and touching absolutely everything. And literally, I did have these moments of fear. Even though I enjoy people interacting with my work, I did have these moments of thinking, oh my God, like, you know, there's going to be nothing left. There's going to be in pieces. And it was okay, but it was slightly terrifying.
Out of control. There's a 9-3 control and it's...
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a crowd. Anyway,
I think that was such a generous and excellent talk. A real pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.